On this Sunday night, dangerous storms, severe weather tearing through part of the country on this Mother's Day weekend, tornadoes, thunderstorms, hail, and it's not over yet. Out of control, that wildfire in Canada is still growing, dangerously shifting in different directions. Well over 1,000 homes destroyed, more threatened. On the attack, exactly 6 months from Election Day, Donald Trump now attacking Hillary Clinton as never before. Hackerville, inside the town in Transylvania that is not only ground zero for cybercrime, but also for fighting it. And the golden years, checking in with recent retiree American Pharoah, living the good life and still earning millions a year after winning the Triple Crown. Nightly News begins now.
From NBC News World Headquarters in New York, this is NBC Nightly News with Kate Snow.
Good evening. One of the tornadoes that hit eastern Colorado Saturday was half a mile wide, and that was just one of many. As that weather system pressed east today, tornado watches went up across four states. Severe thunderstorms are also threatening parts of the plains, Midwest, and South. In all, some 7 million Americans are in the path of dangerous weather tonight. We get more from Sarah Dolloff.
Violent twisters rumbled across northeast Colorado, sweeping up debris and darkening skies. This massive tornado was one of several spotted in Ray, Colorado.
It was one of the most photogenic tornadoes I think in history. It was that dramatic, like no other tornado I've ever seen before, literally, in 35 years.
There were no fatalities, but at least five people were injured. Debris strewn for miles. Dozens of electrical poles were destroyed, leaving many without power.
Ever been through anything like this?
Outside Denver, near the city of Wiggins, a multi-vortex tornado lifted motorhomes and uprooted trees.
Campers upside down, sideways, floating in the lake. A boat shed that has just been crushed.
In Arizona, a rare winter blast in Flagstaff. Just an hour west, hail and rain were to blame for at least six injuries and two deaths on I-40, which closed for hours yesterday. Arizona was one of 10 states with reports of damaging hail Saturday. As the storm pushes east, millions are in the threat zone. More tornadoes and hail possible in the country's midsection through Tuesday. Families urged to stay alert in the peak of tornado season. Sarah Dolloff, NBC News.
In Canada, it's extreme drought fueling that huge wildfire in Alberta that's been burning for a week now. It is now twice the size of New York City. Tens of thousands have been evacuated, and it could be a long time before they can return. Miguel Almaguer reports from the front lines.
This is what firefighters face, a monster inferno devouring a dry forest, 1,600 homes destroyed. In Fort McMurray, firefighters lost their own houses as they scrambled to save others.
I don't consider myself a hero, but I've met more heroes in this experience than I've ever thought existed.
Mass evacuations continued through the weekend, many coming to terms with their terrifying escape.
I was on my knees in the truck thinking, am I going to get from north to south?
With fire still raging and parts of the city in ruins, going home isn't an option.
The gas has been turned off, the power grid has been damaged, the water is not currently drinkable.
But help has arrived. Donations are pouring into evacuation centers. Carlos and Carol Moran were supposed to get married next week. Locals donated the rings, the tux, the wedding dress the couple needed.
Pronounce you husband and wife.
Big donations are coming in from the smallest places. Lemonade stands raising thousands.
I'm really lucky to be here.
And on this Mother's Day, many are grateful for what they still have.
I think she's going to love it because I worked really hard on it.
For evacuees, family has never been so important. Priscilla Mochi was separated from her son Ryan during the escape from the flames. She waited 4 days for this moment.
It's okay, mommy's here, okay? I'll never go anywhere, okay?
Like many, the Mochis don't know if their house is still standing. But tonight, this is the only homecoming that matters.
with the mass evacuations now over. This fire has consumed some 400,000 acres. Firefighters say there is good news. The weather is cooperating. They are slowly gaining the upper hand, and this fire, for now, is moving away from homes. But they are quick to caution. This blaze could turn on a dime, as it has in the past. Kate?
Let's hope for that good news. Miguel Almaguer, thank you. Exactly 6 months from this evening, we will very likely know who our next president will be, November 8th, 2016. And this weekend, without any Republican rivals left to challenge him, Donald Trump went after his new target, Hillary Clinton, in a big way. Our Katie Turr has been covering Trump since he declared his candidacy.
Forget it. Can you imagine, look, can you imagine another 4 years of the Clintons? Seriously.
Donald Trump going all in against Hillary Clinton.
Hillary Clinton wants to take your guns away. On foreign policy, Hillary is trigger happy. Nobody, perhaps in the history of politics, was worse to women or abused women more than Bill Clinton.
On the trail, Trump's crowds can't get enough of the Hillary haters, the candidate feeding off of them, proving nothing is off limits, despite what he told Lester Holt 4 days ago.
I'd like to see a very high-level, policy-oriented campaign. If they treat me properly, I'm going to treat them properly.
The Clinton camp responding, it's Trump being Trump. In a week in which Donald Trump casually suggested destabilizing the entire U.S. economy and cited his attendance at the Miss Universe pageant in Russia as proof of his foreign policy experience, of course he wants to try and change the subject.
Donald Trump hasn't had to worry about black voters. He hasn't had to worry about Hispanic voters. He hasn't really had to worry about women voters either. But as he looks toward the general election, that's going to have to change.
Still, Trump's appeal has been anything but predictable. Clinton's strategy, brush off the dirt and beef up on policy.
Well, he doesn't have a view. He has a slogan, and he needs to be really pressed on that.
Clinton getting closer to clinching, adding more delegates in Guam as Trump struggles to win over party leaders like House Speaker Paul Ryan.
Yeah, I was blindsided a little bit because he spoke to me 3 weeks ago and it was a very nice call, a very encouraging call.
Speaker Ryan's office disputes that claim, saying that he hasn't had a conversation with Donald Trump since March, well before the New York primary. When asked to clarify, the campaign told me that that was the conversation that Donald Trump was referring to. Kate?
Katie Turr, thanks. If you're thinking of visiting an amusement park or carnival anytime soon, rider beware. An accident this week that injured an 11-year-old girl has people once again asking, are some of the most popular rides dangerous? Morgan Radford has that story.
What was supposed to be a fun ride at the carnival for Elizabeth Gilreath quickly turned terrifying. The 11-year-old suffering a fractured skull after her hair got caught in the spinning ride called King's Crown. Her friend capturing this video just moments before the accident.
I stood up and I was like yelling. I was like, stop the ride, stop the freaking ride.
Gilreath was yanked from her seat and tossed to the floor of the ride.
It was still spinning. I had stop it with my hands and turn it to the point where it was to the platform.
Just 2 weeks ago in Amarillo, Texas, a father captured the exact moment his six-year-old son's seatbelt became undone on this roller coaster. Days later in El Paso, two teens were ejected from a ride called the Sizzler, leaving one dead, the other injured. While all appear to be unrelated, an uncomfortable and frightening reality, carnival organizers in Omaha promising to investigate.
We've never had an incident, so again, there's an ongoing investigation.
This King's Crown will remain closed until it's determined to be safe. Morgan Radford, NBC News.
In Maryland, the man accused of shooting six people and killing three of them, including his estranged wife, has been charged with first-degree murder and other charges. The 62-year-old suspect had worked as a federal protective service officer. His wife had filed a restraining order against him, and his guns were taken away. Police now think he obtained a new gun to carry out the attacks at a school and two shopping centers. Overseas, North Korea's leader is known for his combative and aggressive threats, but this weekend, Kim Jong-un struck a conciliatory new tone at a conference of lawmakers being held for the first time in 40 years. He said his country's nuclear weapons will only be used for defense. Still, he had a warning for the United States. Bill Neely has a rare look from inside North Korea.
A standing ovation before he spoke a word. Then Kim Jong-un sent his message to America. He said he wouldn't use a nuclear weapon, Unless North Korea was attacked by aggressors with nuclear arms. He means America. We're a responsible nuclear state, he said. He read his speech, but he may as well have thumped his chest. This was nuclear boasting. After more wild applause, he said he wants to improve relations with countries that were hostile in the past. But the U.S., he said, should stop sanctions and pull out of the Korean Peninsula. Music to the ears of his generals, but U.S. troops won't move from South Korea. Kim Jong-un has delighted in launching missiles and building nuclear weapons. There have been several rocket launches in recent months. The U.S. dismisses his claims to have a miniature nuclear warhead. He said a hydrogen bomb explosion this year was, quote, thrilling. So there's no real sign of a policy change. And a U.S. think tank says satellite images from North Korea show what may be preparations for a nuclear test. The regime invited NBC News to cover this Congress, but they haven't let us in. Instead, they took us first to a wire factory, then to a maternity hospital.
So this machine is a gift of Kim Jong-un?
Yes.
In the capital, they're rehearsing for a major parade, a show of unity and power. But Kim Jong-un isn't about to give up his nuclear power, because that would be the end of him. His message that he won't strike first with nuclear weapons won't impress Washington, and it won't stop the global sanctions against North Korea. The world wants less talk from Kim Jong-un and more action to reduce nuclear tension. Kate?
Bill Neely, inside North Korea. Bill, thank you. Every one of us remembers exactly where we were on September 11th, 2001. Well, now, almost 15 years later, we're getting a never-before-seen perspective on that day. Newly released images show a pained but focused President George W. Bush in the moments and hours after the attacks. Here's Kristen Welker.
The images are seared in our minds. Now, a new look at that awful day and the man who led the country through it. All captured by then White House photographer Eric Draper.
I was documenting a nightmare. I used the camera to actually shield my tears.
Draper documented President Bush that morning visiting a Florida elementary school, and then those terrifying moments after he learned what happened, sitting at a child-sized table, writing remarks he would deliver moments later.
Terrorism against our nation will not stand.
The president then whisked away on Air Force One to Louisiana, watching the horror on television, security concerns keeping him away from Washington.
He really wanted to lead from the Oval Office. He didn't want to be on the run.
The phone calls, the candid moments, exposing his own feelings.
He had to go through a range of emotions that day, like all of us.
Finally, returning to the White House that evening to once again address a broken nation, a country and commander-in-chief bracing for a future they could not yet imagine. Kristen Welker, NBC News, Washington.
When we come back, the fight against cybercrime, pitting hackers against hackers, plus a labor of love, the excruciating detail that goes into bringing Van Gogh's paintings to life like never before. Cyber criminals cost Americans billions of dollars a year, and a lot of them are based in Romania. But that small Eastern European nation has also been on the forefront of fighting the problem. Senior investigative correspondent Cynthia McFadden reports from a city that's being called Hackerville.
This is Transylvania, a region of Romania that conjures up frightening images of Count Dracula. Down the road in the foothills of the Transylvanian Alps, seems the vampires around here are not after your blood, but your money.
Historically, cybercrime has been a big problem here in Romania, and a lot of reporting focused on the town of Râmnica Vâlcea.
It's become known as Hackerville.
What we saw for a large period of time, and still continuing, is what we would consider online fraud or auction fraud.
American victims would send money to Romania thinking they were buying something online, but would never get the merchandise. The Romanian government made fighting cybercrime a national priority, and they have had some success.
We tried and we dismantled a group here, but in a way, the group appears in another place.
Sophisticated software allows the cyber criminals to hide their true location.
It is a kind of chess game. They could be physically here, but virtually they could be in Singapore.
The Romanian cyber culture has bred not just scammers, but hackers. Meet this internationally known 24-year-old. He's known by his nickname, Tin Code, and he was convicted in Romania for breaking into some of America's most secure databases.
You've hacked NASA. You've hacked the Department of Defense. You've hacked Oracle.
Yes, I was finding vulnerabilities in these systems just in order to prove that they are not as secure as they claimed, and at the same time to build my reputation a bit, so I could become a bit more well-known for what I do.
He was given a suspended sentence by the Romanians. The U.S. is not prosecuting him because he alerted the agencies and companies he hacked about their vulnerabilities. Madeline Dimitru has now teamed up with Tin Code to start a security business, CyberSmart Defense.
So I said to myself, the best way to find these vulnerabilities is to talk to a real hacker.
The hope is more cyber vampires go legit because they're a threat, whether you're in the Transylvanian Alps or half a world away. Cynthia McFadden, NBC News, Râmnicu Vulture, Romania.
And when Cynthia went to Romania, she also found the notorious hacker who's in the middle of the Hillary Clinton email controversy. She'll have his first on-camera interview coming up next on the premiere of our new special series, On Assignment. The Triple Crown, of course, is an accomplishment so tough, winners are celebrated long after their racing days are over. American Pharoah was the first horse to win it since the 1970s, and he's enjoying retirement now. But as Dylan Dreyer tells us, there's still big money to be made.
It's the simple life for the horses here at the Ashford Stud Farm in Versailles, Kentucky.
It's pretty cool to come out and be able to see them in person.
Unless you're royalty.
So guys, this is American Pharoah.
Yes, that American Pharoah. He's now enjoying retirement.
He's living the good life for sure.
Relaxing, enjoying good meals, and letting himself go a little. Gaining close to 170 pounds since leaving the racing world.
There you go.
And holding court with his adoring fans. Visitors from all over the world come to see the Triple Crown champ up close and personal.
Do you think he's kind of changed the interest in, I guess, horse tourism? I think that he is an incredible ambassador for the sport. I think that he has a great personality. He's a special horse.
Meeting American Pharoah is now the hottest ticket in town. But it's not just tourists lining up. Breeders with an available mare and $200,000 are filling his dance card three times a day, betting this stud will produce more winners.
Do you expect his price to go up for breeding?
That won't happen for a number of years. He has to prove himself all over again when his sons and daughters are hopefully winning big races just like he did.
Only time will tell if this stud will produce another champion. For now, it's all about living the good life. Dylan Dreyer, NBC News, Versailles, Kentucky.
And when we come back, Van Gogh's paintings brought to life, how a team of artists is putting a first-of-its-kind film together, piece by painstaking piece. Finally tonight, it's never been done before, a fully hand-painted feature film now giving new life to Vincent van Gogh's works. The attention to detail so extraordinary, the finished product is turning into a masterpiece in its own right. Kelly Kobiella has our report.
Everybody has a different story.
Vincent van Gogh like you've never seen him before.
He was a nice, quiet man.
Talking portraits and landscapes that move. 120 of Van Gogh's own paintings telling his stories.
Feel the paint.
Filmmaker and Van Gogh mega fan Dorota Kobiela and an international team of artists are behind it.
So these paintings are iconic and everyone knows them. There's something really interesting and magical when they suddenly start to leave.
So magical, the first trailer went viral.
It's pretty easy these days to make a moving picture look like a painting with computer software like this. What they're doing is much harder.
Every single frame is hand-painted.
You can see the paint literally moving on the big screen. You can see the brush strokes as they're appearing on the big screen. It's just an incredible effect.
Your paintings come to life on screen.
Yes, is it?
What is that like?
Very impressive.
It's a lot of work. Actors and scenes morph into this. The artists take each frame, turn it into an oil on canvas, take a picture, then start all over again.
It's the frame he's just painted. You can see the outline. That's the next frame. And look at this. Starting all over again.
It can take 2 weeks to create 1 second. The opening shot is 603 paintings. End on end, they'd be as tall as the Empire State Building.
Brave and mad and great.
Sort of like Van Gogh.
Exactly.
They've been painting for more than a year, and they're only halfway there.
This is the world's first fully painted feature film. It might possibly be the last as well.
A labor of love as unique as the man who inspired it. Kelly Kobieja, NBC News, Gdańsk, Poland.
So cool. They're hoping to have it completed in theaters worldwide by this fall. And that is NBC Nightly News for this Sunday night. Stay tuned for Lester Holt and the first edition of our powerful new series, On Assignment. I'm Kate Snow. I'll see you tomorrow on MSNBC. For all of us here at NBC News, Happy Mother's Day. Have a great night.